I am sitting in my childhood bedroom right now. I'm in Chicago at my dad's house, and that is where I'm doing the broadcast from.
So, okay, I'm not sure how to approach this, actually.
Well, it's been a little remodeled since I lived here.
Okay, I was a little concerned that you were going to be sitting there with, like, you know, a Cubs pennant, and it was going to be a little...
No, my Daryl Hannah splash poster is not on the wall anymore. That was, like, covering the whole far side of my wall.
You had a Daryl Hannah splash poster?
I had a life-size banner across the wall of Daryl Hannah from Splash.
Did you have this all through high school? Did you get rid of it when you were younger?
I got rid of it when I was younger, but...
That's disappointing. If you'd had a Daryl Hannah splash poster all the way through high school, considering that came out in, what, 82? I would have been very impressed.
Well, I remember my dad used to own video stores, and at that point, I used to get the video posters that they gave him for the stores.
Well, hold up.
Put them up in my room.
Your dad used to own video stores as well as arcades.
He was Blockbuster before Blockbuster.
You know, your dad is Willy Wonka. He really is.
Well, you should have seen. I went to his office and warehouse where they had all these gumballs and super balls and gumball machines and all that.
Because now he makes. Yeah, now he works at a candy. Yeah, you know what? Your dad is Willy Wonka. Actually, that wasn't a joke. That is actually fact.
I think my grandpa more was Willy Wonka.
Do tell.
Because my grandfather used to own a gumball machine factory. I mean, then, like, you would go there, it was this massive warehouse. You'd have to take a golf cart around, and there was, you know, gumball packaging and toys and just craziness. It was insane.
Did he employ dwarves?
He did not. I mean, unless you count me as a dwarf. That was my first job when I was a little kid. I would go and, like, vacuum seal gumballs.
Still, was there like a river of chocolate?
No, but I pretended there was.
Okay, I guess that's good.
So this is weird. This is cool that I'm here and doing this live.
Yeah, this
via
is our
Skype.
Yeah, this is our first Skype show. Normally, Scott and I are in the same room when we record, so this is going to be an interesting experience. It doesn't feel the same when you're not here, Scott. I feel a little bit like a strange, creepy person in my mom's basement talking to myself. But that's okay. That's okay. That's not that far from the truth, ultimately. So it's okay.
I mean, I'm staring at a wall in my childhood bedroom. I mean, how strange can that be?
Maybe you need to go and put up a poster of Daryl Hannah on the computer screen. I'm just saying, maybe that'll help.
I would feel a little more at home, I think.
Anyway, everybody, it is a special Sunday edition, recording on Sunday versus the normal Saturday. It is July 10th, 2011. This is Tech Bacon. Thanks for joining us this week.
Welcome.
Welcome. Once again, this whole summer, it seems like it's going to be, you know, calm down now, and then nothing else is going to happen. Yet more stuff keeps happening. You know, I don't know. Just, I think it's accelerating. It's keep accelerating.
Yeah, I mean, this week, I didn't think there was going to be anything to talk about. I'm like, oh, we're going to have to vamp and figure out something to talk about for the show. And then all of a sudden,
definitely,
we're like, boom, 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 you know. Things just keep, you know, coming the whole week.
Yeah, and big stuff. But before we get to that, actually, I want to go and do some follow-up from last week. First thing, we reviewed the touchpad last week. The HP touchpad, which we'd both been very, very excited about. And one of the things we both talked about is how it was really frustrating that there's that card view that allows you to go and switch back and forth between applications. And it seemed the only way to go and get into there was to press this home button, which, given how touch, you know, focused the rest of the interface is, seemed kind of weird. That was incorrect. There's actually, if you swipe up from the bottom bezel upward, it will launch you into that card view, and then you can swipe upwards again on a particular card you want.
How did you figure that out?
I read it on the internets.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, I could have read the instruction manual, which we did not do before we went live.
No, we did not do that at all. Do you have to start the swipe below the screen?
That's the only way I could figure for it to really work, because otherwise you end up kind of, you know, hitting one of the – there's that dock.
In the app or
whatever. You start hitting something in the dock or in the app itself, yeah. You know, nice that feature's there. It definitely does address the issue of, like, wanting everything to be touch-based, but not – I mean, sure. I got to be honest, not that intuitive. I feel like it's one of those things that we should have been able to figure out, considering it's a major – you know, conceit of how the OS works.
And we tried to do that. Like, you and I were both, like, swiping all over the place. We couldn't get it to work.
Totally. So there's that. We were wrong in that. But, you know, it's weird. I spent all week with the touchpad. I said, you know, I'm going to load up all my stuff on it, and I'm going to go
By the way, we got this thing, and I was going to take it with me on my trip to Chicago. So I brought it home the night before. I loaded all my stuff in, and I got so frustrated with this thing that I just left it. I'm like, Brian, here, you can have it for the week. So,
Well, your problem was you couldn't find a way to go and sync video to it, correct?
Well, I mean, I could find a way to get some video to play, but there was this, there was an HP movie app that was on there. And I mean, how frustrating is this, right? So they have this HP movie app and you install it. And then once you click on the app, it says, stay tuned. The HP movie service is coming soon. Keep the app installed and you will be notified when it's ready.
Dude, I got that beat. I got that beat. Remember how when they first announced the product, how Kindle at launch was a big deal?
Right. Yes. Yes.
There is a Kindle app available at launch. And when you launch it, it says Kindle is coming soon. Keep this installed.
Come on.
Yes. Yes. There's
why
actually
did they launch? I don't understand why they launched it. I really don't. It doesn't make sense. It seems like, once again, and we've seen this a couple of different times, where products are just being launched where there's no real rush. And they seem to be throwing them into the marketplace for too early.
And it is really strange that you think that when you have like an emerging market like this, I guess the one piece of logic is like get a presence there in any way you can. And I understand that completely.
Guess.
But at the same time, this is not, as we talked about last week, this is not functioning, I think, like a normal market. There is an iPad market. And
right.
And then there's like, in terms of like the other stuff, that has to go and somebody has to go and create that other market. You know, that general tablet market, it isn't there yet. Someone else has got to do it.
No, it's definitely not. So what were your other things that while you were using it this week?
Well, first of all, it was like the Kindle thing was a big funny thing. But
that's crazy.
Yeah. So but I put all my stuff on it, right? And I put the iPad away. And I'm going to say, this is going to be my only tablet for the week. I'm just going to go and see what that experience is like. And it was really, really frustrating, I got to say. We talked about this before. A couple things. You really do appreciate the beauty of the interface and how wonderful it is. It looks tremendous.
Sure,
you know, all the work that
nice
all the graphic
screen,
designers have done is incredible. Yeah. You know, and the display is great. The problems we had with the hardware actually didn't bother me that much once I started using it.
You didn't feel it like hiccupy like we did at first?
Oh, I meant in terms of physical size and that kind of stuff.
Oh, like
yeah.
The actual feel,
yeah.
Like
you know, the weight or like the feel of thickness, that didn't bother me at all. That kind of like disappears, and just because you're focused on that great screen. And the screen, you know,
right,
being
right.
An incredible screen says a lot. You know, it does a lot for you. I ended up acclimating to the hiccups, the kind of like the, you know, stuttery and the slowness in response, because you could kind of go when you're pressing your finger down on something, if you expect it to, you know, not react until you lift your finger up instead of pressing down. If you can accept that conceptually, then like everything works fine because it's how you'd expect it to work.
You shouldn't have to do that, but I guess you get
no.
Used
you,
to
I mean,
it,
it's
quick,
it's yeah, it's kind of silly. But if you kind of press and then release and then expect an action, then it doesn't work. And so those kind of things fade to, you know, the wayside a bit, because those are things that look bad in comparison to a different product. But if you were just using this product, you wouldn't notice as much.
Right.
What was the big thing for me was the app problem. And like, you know, there's been a lot of talk about how, you know, this doesn't have apps, or Honeycomb doesn't have apps. And it's kind of, you know, it's hard to go and know how much of a problem that really is, because what do people really use these things for? Like we were talking last week, is it about browsing? Is it about apps and tablets? What is it? Media consumption?
Exactly.
And for me, like I said, there are certain things I do, you know, on a tablet. You know, they're browsing, it's Twitter, it's, you know, it's RSS feeds, it's Instapaper, that kind of stuff. And at the end of the day, I couldn't get a decent RSS reader. I couldn't get a free Twitter client that had list support. Which, granted, it's a brand new platform, but it is a brand new platform coming in against this competition. You'd think that they would go make sure this stuff was ready.
But also, like, I mean, it's a brand new platform for the tablet, but they have had this platform for the phone for
and the
a
way
couple it, years
and
now.
And using, I mean, like the iPad and the iPhone, you can go and use, you know, pre-apps on this thing, but it doesn't. It's a terrible experience. It's really bad.
Really?
Just like running iPhone apps on the iPad is terrible. I mean, you can do it, and that's good to pump up the availability, you know, available app numbers, but it's not good.
I do have to say, just as an aside, I've been playing with my brother's Galaxy Tab this week a bunch, and the apps that are the phone apps that work, not all of them work on the tablet, but the ones that do, it resizes and redraws and are really nice.
Oh, really?
It's kind of impressive. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It spreads it out across the whole screen.
Right.
So it's, you know, doesn't fit right, but like the resolution is all right and everything like that. It's kind of nice.
Right. Well, you can blow the stuff up too, like on the iPad and stuff. So like that's,
yeah,
it's, I mean, it does get weird because the targets are bigger and like sometimes the fonts, does it actually blow the fonts up, or does it go and like, you know, just redraw them at like at a larger size?
Just,
you know what I mean?
It redraws them. So it doesn't blow it up. You don't,
okay.
You don't get like that pixelation. It's actually, you know, it's the resolution of the screen.
A lot of the iPhone to iPad apps does that. It's like, why bother?
Yeah.
And so for me, it was one of these funny things where it's like, okay, I got this stuff and I did some flash video browsing and that was cool. And then I put the thing away and I just haven't, I mean, I tried to go and find reasons to use it. I really did because I wanted to go and have it. But at a certain point, the utility just wasn't there.
Right.
And I've been using the hell out of my phone this last week. But it is, once again, it's, you know, like we said last week, it's a bummer because it is beautiful and there's so much promise. Although I got to say, one thing I was so excited about, and we've talked about this, was the card view, the multitasking interface, the way it works.
Right. I mean, that's what one of the big advantages we all thought was going to be the cool thing from the HP devices. You
know? I don't think it actually works that well.
Like after using it, you're just not – it's just not like –
You know what?
Maybe
it's just that I don't have, you know, a ton of apps to be using at the same time. But the problem is the way it groups apps, like you can go and have – if you run a browser,
see, that
right?
I didn't like.
Yeah, you can have a browser and it'll run all the cards in one section. But then if you launch a browser through a different application or a different instance, then those will be like somewhere else. And the truth is if I'm trying to go and go between stuff, if I have to go and, you know, activate this card view either by the home button or the, you know, swipe from the below bottom bezel and then scroll around to find the thing and then try to find a card within that. That takes a lot of time and could be quite honest for as kind of, you know, simplified and one could argue kind of, you know, not childlike, but super, super simplified.
But
the iPad app drawer is,
yeah.
I hit, you know, double tap to the button and then I press one thing to get to the app and I'm there. That's quicker. That's easier than the card view version.
And it shouldn't be.
Yeah,
like I mean, when you think about it, it shouldn't be, but yet I guess it is.
Well, it's that thing. It's like you go and give if you put everything out there and let it be more like a PC. That complexity is kind of innate. You kind of can't get away from it at a certain point.
You know what else I noticed that you could do, and I really couldn't figure out a reason why you would want to, was you know you can group the browser windows and stuff like we saw, but you can also group different. Unless this is what you're talking about, you can group different apps together. Did you notice that?
I didn't play with it, but I think I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why you would ever do that. I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, in what instance would I want to have a browser window and, you know, a reader window and email window grouped together?
You know, I think it's for what I was just talking about. I think if you were doing a bunch of if you're working on one task with three apps, it's a lot quicker to go and, you know, go into CarView and then find the thing, go back. Because otherwise you're scrolling around because, you know, it only shows, I think, three or four, you know, how many
right, whatever the screen can handle.
Yeah.
You know, it's like 2.5 almost.
And so it becomes a lot of scrolling around, you know.
Sure. Right.
Actually, you know, it's like one and then half a one on either side. So it becomes a lot of scrolling around. I can get that. But the problem is, too, those cards aren't easy to navigate when they're stacked atop one another.
Exactly. Not at all.
So
it's a little confusing.
It was one of those things where I was kind of it made me go and appreciate what I thought was kind of like, you know, an overly simple solution on the Apple side. I kind of said, oh, that actually is making me do, you know, it's easier for me to do work that way. Actually, it makes me get around quicker and faster.
Sure.
And one thing I got to say. That I really, really appreciated from the iPad. And this is something I would never think about in 10 years. Like, it's never occurred to me. When you're selecting text, right, or trying to move a cursor, you know, between like different words, if I can say you want to go and edit an email and you tap it and you tap the end of the word, you want to move back to the beginning.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, you hold your finger down the spot and this little loop opens where you get, like, above your finger, you get a magnified spot of what you're looking
at. Awesome.
And then you can move back and forth and get it exactly where you want. There is no such functionality on the touchpad. You have to basically press on top of the word so your finger's covering it up and hope you get there.
I mean, and it's like, yeah, that wasn't part of the iOS originally, but that was a while ago. That should be a basic function now.
And it is those small details. Yeah, and it's the small details I think that we don't appreciate.
It goes back to what we talked about last week.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's those core concepts that just need to be dead on.
I agree. So, you know, thank you for leaving it behind. I was really excited to go and have the extra time with it.
I'm glad you, I mean, cause like I, you know, I've been so busy out here and probably you had more time to actually explore it. Yeah. So,
and the truth is if it had a broader selection of applications, it would be a great device. It really would be. I mean, it wouldn't be necessarily the best device, but it would be a great device that you could recommend without hesitation.
It's just so hard to come back from these reviews that come out. Like that first impression is so important.
Yeah. Well, I think with all these things, the big lesson is you don't launch unless you've got a basic ecosystem running already. Because if you don't have the apps that somebody can pick it up, if somebody who runs an iPad or a tab or whatever competing device, if they can't, you know, pick up your new device and do everything they do on that thing, or like, you know, at least like 70% of it, right? The basic stuff immediately, your product's not ready. It really isn't.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm with you.
Yeah. So that was one thing. And also there's one other piece of follow-up. We were talking about tab browsing last week and I was talking about how the iPad now has tab browsing and I misspoke. I said it was the iPad 2 had it where iPad 1 didn't have it. It's actually iOS 5 has tab browsing and previous iterations of the operating system don't.
Oh, it's hard for us to, cause we use the the betas and stuff we don't remember.
Exactly. But I wanted to go and thank our listener Slim, you know, shot me a tweet and pointed that out. I wanted to thank him for that. Slim also has an amazing comic books podcast called Paper Keg as a website as well. So if any of you guys are comics guys, check out Paper Keg. It's really fantastic.
Awesome.
I just want to say thanks to Slim for giving the heads up on that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We appreciate it. So some of the other big news this week was
Facebook.
Oh, awesome, awesome news.
And it was one of those things where it's like, is it a reaction? Was it already planned? Do we really know? Probably not, but...
Right. And what we're talking about is the Skype video chat integration into Facebook.
Correct.
Which was announced and launched this week.
Right. The week after, obviously, Google Plus launched. There's also a group messaging component of it that they have on the website. And while interesting, obviously it's not groundbreaking because there's lots of, you know, third-party apps that handle that we've talked about before. The real interesting thing here was the Skype integration, mostly because of the partnership and also because it's a response, or it's being seen as a response to Hangouts from Google Plus.
It's interesting. I mean, obviously this thing's been in the works for a while.
Of course.
But it's interesting now that Microsoft owns Skype to see that partnership is there. It's unexpected. I expected it from Skype, but since they're together, obviously they weren't going to dump that relationship that was started. But it's an interesting partnering when you say Microsoft and Facebook.
Definitely, definitely.
You know, you didn't think you'd hear that.
Well, I mean, in a sense, it's very, very smart, though, because I think that's one of the things Microsoft gets by buying Skype. You know, they bought it because they have this huge installed user base, and there also are all these potential social, you know, ramifications that they don't really have any other than like Xbox Live.
They don't have anything
there, really.
No, and really, if you know, it's like if something like this goes well, and this is a discussion for probably later in the year. It's possible that come Windows 8, there could be some deep Facebook integration.
Sure.
You never know.
Definitely. And especially like, further iterations of Windows Phone as well. And I mean, it kind of makes sense there. Also, they're not in direct, at the moment, they're not in direct competition yet.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
It's not like it's, the whole HTML5 thing, Project Spartan, you could argue that would be going after, Windows 8 at a certain point. But at this point yet, Microsoft needs a foothold more than they need to go and be playing, anything defensively.
Exactly. Exactly. So we gave it a try.
Definitely.
We popped on Facebook to give it a try. Pretty nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's you go and initiate a chat, in Facebook, and there's a little video camera icon.
I don't know if it's going to always be like that, but you have to register. You have to go to the facebook.com/video calling, whatever, first to initiate.
Correct. To basically activate your Facebook account to use the feature, because it's not rolled out to everybody yet.
Right. And then when you start the video chat, it downloads a little Java applet, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're up and running.
Yeah.
And you get a full window. Brian and I did from Chicago to Los Angeles, Facebook video chat through Skype, and it was good quality.
Yeah, and it works exactly as you would expect. I mean, it is the Skype is what's running it, so. It's all quality you would expect, and you're on a pretty, I think you said, a slow internet connection now, but
yeah,
we had
a pretty slow connection.
But quality was good, no dropouts, everything was solid, like, sync was strong, it just worked like you'd expect.
Yeah, I guess, why not have it? I mean, is it something that's going to, do you think people have been, like, awaiting this?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
Not really.
Me neither.
At
I mean,
all,
I think but, people will. But, use, I think people will use it, but I think anyone currently, that does the kind of video chat and conferencing already uses Skype, I think.
Yeah, and also, people use AIM for video chat or for iChat. There's
all FaceTime and all.
Yeah,
that
there's stuff. All this different stuff. I mean, right now, there's nothing that's particularly great about it. It's not really integrated with Facebook in any intriguing social way. Other
right. There's
than
no
it's
social aspect
context.
To it.
Yeah, exactly. You can't share content. You can't do anything interesting like that. But it's there.
But
it's basically in terms of bringing, solidifying, their user base and basically bring people away from, a standalone Skype app to bringing everything, under the Facebook roof. It's good. It's good for them.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's easy and the quality is good. So, I mean, that's a great first step. And I think, hopefully they will integrate some sort of more, a social aspect to it, to be able to I don't know. Yeah, but I mean, I have no idea.
It is good in that it is so easy that it, you know, if most people are already on Facebook. So if you're at Facebook and want to chat with your friends and family and they're online, you can just do it here instead of having to go elsewhere. That's good because over time that just trains people to come to Facebook everywhere. And that's kind of part of their, you know, they want to be a platform ultimately.
That's true. And you know, like people have Facebook running more often than they have their Skype running. So
definitely.
if you you may do a random video chat that you wouldn't have done, you know, through Skype. Or somebody that you just see on and you'll pop into the video chat. So yeah. I guess I could see that, definitely.
Yeah. And a lot of people were framing this as a response to Google Hangouts. And I think they're not analogous. They're very, very different in what they do.
They are.
Google, basically, Skype on Facebook is just a one-to-one connection. You basically, you know, it's like, it is exactly like, you know, a single person Skype call or iChat or any of those things we're talking about.
And you initiate it with one person. It's very straightforward.
Yeah. Very traditional.
Where
Google Plus is offering, that's, you know, Hangouts. That is basically you post to whoever you want in your Google Plus, you know, world that you're hanging out on video and they can join you or not. And it's just more of a
social. To your different circles, right?
Yeah. Basically, you can put it to individual people or to your different circles or to everybody in the world and people can just come hang out with you, strangers, new people, whatever. So in that case, you know, it's much more about finding people and finding new people to hang out with and more of a casual interaction where the Facebook thing seems more old school. And that's what's interesting about Hangouts. We tried that as well.
Yeah.
Quality did not seem to be as good. There was a couple sync problems at first, then it seemed optimized and everything was good, but the video quality wasn't quite there.
Right. It was good.
It wasn't as good.
It just wasn't as good as Skype.
Yeah. But at the same time, the idea of Hangouts to me is incredibly more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely a different, more social, you know, aspect of the video chat that we really haven't seen before.
Yeah, because you can go and turn it into a casual way of meeting people, of hanging out with people, of sharing information, not so focused. That opens it up to become a much more interactive format, you know, making a service that makes it a thing where...
I can see, the more I think about it, the more I can see, you know, just somebody hopping on there and let's say, you know, starting some sort of tech conversation. And then all of a sudden you pop on and all these people are getting in there and getting in on the conversation and debating whatever they're debating. It just opens it up to a really cool, you know, interesting. Yeah, it makes me excited.
Yeah, I mean, and it can be incredibly viable. And also for businesses, I think there's a great, you know, potential there where you can kind of.
Totally.
And that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't
think. It's very cool.
Yeah. And it's so in a lot of ways, they aren't really analogous. I have to say. In terms of utility, yay, Facebook, Skype, I don't know I'm going to be using it where I do see myself using Hangouts.
Right. The Hangouts thing, I want to see where it goes. I would love to see, let's say some author pops up a Hangout. You know, I'm hanging out if for a discussion. And then all of a sudden these people come in here and you're having this discussion with a famous author.
Or filmmakers, musician. Musicians, yes.
Like, can't you see that happening?
That'd be awesome.
You know, like, and even they could post it on, you know, and say, we're going to be starting a Hangout in, you know, and the first, you know, 20 people that come in or somebody will just start it. It opens up the social media world in a very unique way.
Well, also in terms of brands, like brand pages are apparently coming in 2 weeks to Google Plus. A lot of people have been kind of like, you know, making ad hoc ones and you're not supposed to right now.
Yeah, right. I know. I subscribe to a couple of them.
Right. But imagine the potential there, because that way you can go and really bring together. I mean, it's limited, right? You can't, it's only like, you know, it has that, it's only, I think it's 10 people. But you can go and, you know, utilize that to go and, you know, bring your audience in, engage with them, do all kinds of things that you really can't. There's no other thing that really works like that right now, at least not that simply, not out of the box, turnkey, boom, you're on.
No, not at all. And I think they could even, like, what would be really interesting is I could see them adding more functionality where in, like we were talking, a musician or an author or something like that could lead a discussion and, you know, they queue up people to ask questions. You know, where you can join it and then it's a queue and then you can ask questions. Just the possibilities are fantastic.
It's very, very cool.
The more I think about it.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how this stuff evolves. And I think Facebook is going to have to respond with some sort of, you know, group version of this because I think
– I'm sure they will.
They have to.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. But by the way, speaking of Google Plus, Brian and I both have been using it a bunch, you know, right?
Yeah. And by the way, and they have been opening up invites more and more. So if you are listening and you do want an invite, Is that where you're going?
No. That's what I was wanting you to lead right into.
Oh, okay, yeah. Shoot us an email at info@techbacon.net, and we'll be happy to invite you, whatever. Yeah, because, I mean, they have it a rolling thing where they open up the window, and at that time people can send, and new people can sign up. Once they close that door, doesn't matter if you've been sent an invitation or not, you can't get in.
Right.
But
we'll send out as we are able to.
Definitely.
It's funny, Brian. You know, Brian and I can't see each other right now. So normally when we're doing the show, we can kind of give each other visual cues when we're going in and out of something and be like, yes, no, whatever. We can't do that right now. It's funny.
Well, also the way we have it wired up, yeah, we can't see each other on video either. So it's very flying in the dark.
Yes. Very funny. also just – we should do a little brief follow-up on Google Plus in general. I've been playing around with it, and I have to say there's a couple of features that I really like. I like how it's kind of a mashup between Twitter and Facebook.
Yes.
You know, like I like that you can follow somebody in the same stream. It's really a different way of thinking.
It totally is, yeah.
And I like it. Like I didn't see that before I started to play around with it a little. It conceptually didn't come to me. But I really like the meshing of those two things. And I like how you can post something that's completely public to the world.
Definitely.
I love that.
In case, you guys didn't listen to last week, basically the way it works is you have these things called circles, and you can go and share information with these various circles. And that can be people, you know, that you know or whatever. But you can also follow people. It's an asymmetric thing. It's not like Facebook where if you follow them, they follow you, and you guys, you know, are both in each other's networks. You can just listen to somebody. You know,
right.
like it is on Twitter, and everything that they share to the public, you will be able to see.
Yeah, it's very cool. I've followed a couple of people now, just to see how that works, and having that integrated in the same stream as me sharing stuff, I find it very appealing.
I agree, and it's funny. I think it is a big threat to Twitter, and I'm sure they're aware. Although the one thing that Twitter, I think, does right that, you know, Google Plus isn't doing right yet, is that the way they go and sort posts in your stream on Google Plus is if something gets, you know, commented on a lot or, you know, plus one'd a lot, it goes to the top of your stream. So if you are following somebody that is really, really well known or a celebrity, that always ends up at the top of your stream.
That's kind of annoying.
Yeah, which makes it very, very frustrating. I've broken out all the really famous people in the, you know, a little separate circle so I can just look at them selectively. because I can see, you know, otherwise you just never see anything else. It becomes very, very stale. Where Twitter, everything is pushed down. I mean, it's a real-time live stream. So you have no choice but to go and see the most current thing on top of it. In that sense, Twitter at the moment is much better for a newsfeed type of thing. But that's a tweak to the algorithm for Google Plus.
Right. Yeah. By the way, sorry, Brian, can you hear me okay? You were starting to break up while I was we were just talking.
You just got a little Cylon, but I have you.
Okay, cool. Okay. You have. Thanks, Brian. I feel safe now.
I know, I'm Superman to your Margot Kidder. It's cool.
Oh, God.
Who's holding me? Who's holding you? What?
What? good, nice quote. I like it. That's good. By the way, speaking of that, and if you can have this in the show or not, but here in Chicago, they're actually shooting the new Superman movie, or prepping to shoot the new Zack Snyder Superman movie. Yeah.
We should do a movie show at some point, because we could talk about that movie alone for like 3 hours.
Yeah. We should do that every now and then. We'll do a special episode. That'd be fun.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, with different topic, not a tech topic, you know? Like every, you know, that's a good idea. I think we should do that.
Cool. Dude, Flick Bacon.
Flick Bacon. Cinema Bacon. Although that sounds like cinnamon bacon, and I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't. We had our listener Jared posted a link to some chocolate covered bacon he wants us to review. That I'm down with. Cinnamon bacon.
Oh, it's going
to
happen.
Cinnamon bacon, I don't know.
Yeah, me neither. It doesn't do it for me. all right, what else we got up on the tech agenda?
Well, finally, after much rumoring and years, literally years of waiting, it looks like Spotify is now finally going to launch in the U.S.
Yes, Spotify, the mythic European music service that has been around forever that us in the U.S. have not been able to enjoy.
Exactly. And this last week, they finally put up a page saying, hey, it's coming. You can sign up. We'll send you an invite when it's ready to go.
There's a rumor it's going to be integrated with Facebook.
Well, and on that front page, there's a quote from Mark Zuckerberg basically being very, you know.
Oh,
very,
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, talking about how much he loves it. I mean, let me pull up the quote right now, but it was very.
Oh, yeah, I see it. Spotify is so good, Mark Zuckerberg, CEO and founder of Facebook.
Right. And that's the big rumor, that they're going to go and partner with Facebook, which could be a nuclear bomb on the music space if it's
done
right.
I think it really
right.
could, yeah. Yeah. I mean, a music sharing and streaming service through Facebook is I would love that. I would love to use that.
Yeah. And why don't you give a breakdown, because since you use Spotify, right?
Yeah, I signed up for a European account. I set up a proxy on my computer so it seemed like I was in Europe, so I was able to sign up for the free account. I wanted to try it. I was really curious.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So it's a very very nice service. They have a couple of different tiers. The free service is ad supported, and for the free service you have full access to the Spotify catalog on your computer. It's just ad supported, so as you're playing things you get commercials just like a radio station. And you know, they don't interrupt a song, but it's in between songs, and it works similar to how the La La service worked. You can look up an album or a playlist or whatever, and you can follow people. It has a very social aspect built into it. And they have at least in Europe, they have a really nice catalog of music. And you can just pull up anything you want, and you can play as many times as you want, as long as you want. You can have that thing sitting there playing all day. You're just going to hear ads. Fine. You know, for something free, that's great.
Now, does the free version work on mobile, or is that when the free pay plan's
coming
into play?
It does not. Yeah, you cannot use the free version on your mobile phone. Then they have the first step. You know, there's two tiers of paid, right? What were the tiers?
Supposedly, I mean, nothing's been announced officially. Supposedly, it's going to be the free service, and there's going to be a $5 a month and a $10 a month in the U.S.
Right, and the first, at least I know, the first tier of the free service, you can have it on the mobile. Oh, also, even in the free service, you can basically save, because there's a Spotify app, so you can save songs to your machine.
To your computer.
Yeah, to your desktop and play them. So you can save a bunch of albums and have them, you know, there and available to play without streaming if you want to.
Oh, so if you're somewhere without an internet connection, then you're good.
Yeah, which is nice.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I like that feature. So then obviously the premium, you get the mobile, and I think maybe the ultra premium is no ads, is my guess.
Got it.
You know what I mean? So I'm excited for this thing to come here. This is I like using the service a lot. It's about time that we have it here.
It is interesting. There was apparently a presentation that was being made to advertisers from Spotify to in about the U.S. launch, and they were predicting – they have 7 million apparently subscribers in Europe. You know, this is after a couple of years, right?
Right.
They're expecting to go and have 50 –
and this is all of Europe. This is not
– right. They're expecting to have 50 million users in the U.S. after 1 year. Now, that doesn't sound like they're pitching it as subscribers but active users.
Yeah.
And with Facebook, if you were going and, you know, if every time you go and like something and it's integrated in so it's sharing it to all your friends and everything, I could totally see 50 million people just jumping on board just to go and have it because it's easy.
Just
it's right
it,
there.
Yeah.
It's, once
I mean,
again,
think
it's
about
right
it.
There
it's,
in your
if
Facebook.
It's, if it's Facebook and it's free, why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah.
Like there's no reason not to. And you're going to see your friends sharing a song, and you're going to click on it, and then you're going to be in it, and you're going to – I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Definitely. And even if it is just for the free service for people at work or whatever, once again, it's that thing that makes so much sense where it's, you know, want to be a platform, consolidate everything under one roof, you know, and then you never need to leave.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if the other – those like Rhapsody and RDO, if they're kind of shaking in their boots a little bit.
Well, it's
because this could be a behemoth.
Because those are great services, but the truth
they
is,
are.
If you can go and have something integrated into what you already use, it's gonna
That's
make it that much stickier. It's like Google Plus, honestly. It's like that same thing. If you know that, why not? It makes complete sense.
And strangely, I mean, I don't know outside of the people that follow this kind of thing how known the name of Spotify is, but I think it kind of is because it's just been in the news and it's kind of been around. Like you're just hearing the name a lot.
Yeah. Well, plus, you know? I think a lot of people have, you know, dabbled with Pandora or dabbled with, you know, RDO and all those different services. But if you have something that's basically put out there, you know, like I said, on Facebook, something that broad, that's going to get so much attention. That's going to get so much press just unto itself. It will become the best known version of that service just by virtue of the partnership.
That's true. Yeah. And I mean, if anybody wants to sign up for an invite, you just go to www.spotify.com and right on the front page, it says sign up for an invite. Be one of the first to get Spotify and you throw in your email address. you know, you can hopefully get invited when the thing launches, probably this week.
Yeah. And they, to clarify, they haven't announced a date, but yeah, it should be any time. I mean, literally any day.
Yeah. That's the guess, and we'll see. And once it's up, we'll do a full-on review.
Absolutely.
You can count on it.
And in that music space news, Amazon kind of, you know, announced something today. And if you want to go and look at the music cloud world, is basically, you know, Apple, Amazon, and Google, like in a three-way, you know, battle against each other. You could see this as the first, you know, round of good news for consumers coming out of that competition.
Absolutely.
Where Amazon previously, their cloud drive service, which as we talked about before, you got free gigs of storage space for free. That could be music, that could be files, it could be anything you want. And then if you wanted to get more, you could go, they had, you know, paid plans starting at 20 bucks a year for 20 gigs, et cetera.
Right.
Any type of data you got counted against that cap. In response to Google and Apple, which is so cool, Amazon's now saying, you know what, you can store all those files, you know, except all your music won't count. So you could have 100 gigabyte music collection, and if you are buying our $20 a year package, you can store all of that. Unlimited.
Nice. Forever. Nice deal.
Yeah, which is great.
Nice deal. And they revamped their uploader a little bit, so now it will recognize any song you purchased from Amazon in the past, which it hadn't done, and will automatically end up, you know, online with you. And it shows you, when you do the upload, it shows you these are the songs you purchased from Amazon, whatever. I don't know how they're encoded or if it just goes against your account. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but it's a nice little feature.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, it's weird that they're not just show up there, but
yeah, it is. Like, if they already know what you bought, and I guess that they're, well, it doesn't make any sense also, because if they're uploading everything, it doesn't really matter. I guess they don't want to go and host the things that they already have on their servers. They probably come from a different place. But yeah, I love that. It was one of those things where it's like, this is a random, and it was weird when they announced it, I kind of was like, wait, they don't do that already? It seems like an antiquated notion.
It felt like they did.
Yeah, because the way it works with the other services, you know, Google is basically, you can store unlimited, you know, amount of music for free at the moment. They're saying it's going to cost at some point, we don't know what. And iTunes Match, that's going to cost $25 a year for 20,000 songs, I think.
Right. What you said was the $20 a month was obviously
undercutting that 25, yeah, for iTunes.
Yeah, I mean, you and I were talking, and Brian's like, "Oh, I know why."
Totally that price, which is, I mean, it's great. I mean,
it is
funny. I still don't like that Amazon interface. I switched to Google Music, and I haven't looked back in terms of, like, you know, web, you know, browser. I want them to go and, you know, get a better version of that web app going, because it is weird.
Yeah. I want to try now that I have the unlimited option here. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to get all my music up on Amazon to play with it a little more, because I didn't really go full force on it. I just kind of threw up a couple albums and then I went to the Google, which I've been using a lot and I love.
Definitely.
But I'm curious to, I want to throw everything up there and just, you know, give it a try and see how it plays. I do like that when you buy an album, it's right there. That's so nice.
Absolutely. Well, that store and, you know, cloud service integration, I think, is, you know, that's going to be necessary for all these services eventually.
Yeah, totally. I agree.
It was a side note, it was kind of a bummer. When I first signed up for my Google Music invitation, I signed up with an email. I have a couple emails I'm using, right? I signed up with one email. And then when Google Plus launched, I'm like, well, crap, I kind of wanted – I had a different email from my Google Plus account. And I wanted – since I'm in Google Plus and all the other Google services all day, I wanted them all integrated. Otherwise, I have to open up a different browser, you know, with a different cookie, sign in at a different account to make the Google Music thing. So I'm now having to re-upload 10,000 plus songs, which is miserable and anger-inducing as it was the first time.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, but I'm about 6,000 through, so it's going faster this time, it seems.
Right.
But man, the upload is miserable. It's so miserable.
Yeah, it's painful. But once they're there, then it's no big deal, because adding like one album is so quick.
Totally.
Like, you can, I threw something up there and walked out the door and was streaming it on my phone as I was walking to get coffee. It was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, and that stuff, it goes up, and it goes up in minutes. It's just that big number, you're like, oh, really? Really?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, if you want to try out Google Music and you want to try Google Plus, use the same email address.
Yes.
That's all we're saying.
Tip of the week.
And all this streaming stuff we're talking about, obviously the mobile game is changing a big time, and the amount of data we're all using is going to be changing a big time, whether it's going to be video chatting or music streaming or, you know, anything. And not surprisingly, the, you know, cell phone carriers in the U.S. are saying, this is a great time. We can screw you guys more.
Unreal.
Yeah. So AT&T did was it last year or earlier this year?
Recently. It was earlier this year. Yeah. It was earlier. Oh, no. Actually, you know what? Yeah, I think it was late last year.
Yeah. I think it was like November or something like that. Anyway, Verizon said now it's our turn to, you know, milk you
guys
more.
Get rid of the unlimited data.
Yeah, unlimited data plan where you could kind of, you know, this, and this was been around 4 years. You could basically, no matter how much data you use, they weren't truly unlimited. If you like pulled down like 5 gigs a month, they would go and start, you know, checking out your account and giving you grief. But on paper, it was, you know, unlimited, and now it's all tiered. Thanks, guys.
I really don't like that whole concept of the tiered data. It doesn't make sense. It reminds me, it's almost like they're stepping back to when you had, I mean, for the most part, and not everybody does, but everyone, you know, there's unlimited minutes or at least enough minutes that, you know, when you talk on the phone, you don't think about it. That's mm-hmm. what it should be. You shouldn't have to think about it.
I agree. And the truth is their tiers aren't that bad. It's $30 for 2 gigs, and they have a $50 plan for 5 gigs of data, and then $80 for 10 gigs. And then also for just feature phones, they have – you can pay $10 to get 75 megs of data, which is weird. But I mean, I get why they're –
why would you even use that?
Yeah. I get why they're doing it. Like, I mean, smartphone adoption, they were trying to encourage it, hence the unlimited plans and all that made sense. And now that everybody's, you know, done, according to Simco.com, it's looking like, you know, next year 50% of U.S. users will be on smartphones. And then, you know – and so they don't really need to go and incentivize it so much anymore because the devices are driving it. The operating systems are driving it. You know, just the mass market, you know, the pop culture is driving smartphone adoption at this point.
Right. I mean, Sprint still has unlimited. T-Mobile still has unlimited, you know, for now.
Yeah. Well, and I think they always will because they're so small. I mean, if T-Mobile even exists in a year.
Well, that's
– merger goes through, it's like, you know, bye-bye. You know, but it also – like, but Sprint, I feel bad for them. You're saying that they're not going to go in WebOS, the first pre – you know, launch them. They're not getting the pre 3.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Which is like – I mean, it's a bummer, but it's, you know, I don't know if it's – yeah, I like Sprint. I like it because of the logo on the totem pole. Because of the logo on the totem pole, I love them for pricing and whatnot.
Yeah, oh, totally. I mean, my brother's on Sprint. He, you know, has been for years and loves the service. You know. But it's weird to me to go from unlimited and back off.
Yeah, well, it's a step backwards. You know, I mean, the truth is, even me, like, I consider myself a fairly heavy smartphone user, and I usually don't cross that 2 gig threshold. I could actually be saving money if I got off the unlimited plans, but I'm grandfathered in, and I know that next year, you know, I probably will be using more, or when I'm, you know, it's going to change.
Interesting. So you've been actually like looking at your data usage and kind of
tracking it,
seeing where you've been.
Yeah, because it is cheaper. You know, if you go to like for that, you know, that 2 gig plan, and like. I vacillate between like 1.8 and like 2.2.
I don't understand why not offer both. Give it to people who want the less expensive and opens up your base. And then the unlimited, you know, even if you made it a tiny bit more expensive than it is now, I think people would still use it.
Well, I mean, I think if they could do an unlimited, but they'd have to charge, you know, it'd be like $150. They'd have to charge something crazy. Right. And you can't say, by the way, this thing that you other people are getting for $30 is now going to cost $150 everybody else. People would, I mean, riot even more.
And you know what sucks is like the whole, you know, having to actually do that is there's a small population of people that totally abuse that data.
Oh, sure.
You know, and it affects everybody.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also, in this case, I think they know what's coming. And, you know, let's face it, it's not – the cell phone companies are all about – they're not really about, you know, doing what's great for any of us. It's, look, we got text plans, right? Tiered SMS plans, which take up, you know, you know 5K, 2K. I mean, it's like they're so small, like what you're doing. And I have to pay like, you know, $15 a month for some of that stuff. It's ridiculous.
I can't wait till that just goes away because all these group messaging apps, they're going to kill the texts. Yeah. I mean, I think we're you know, probably a year away from that.
Well, I think I do. I mean, maybe not. I think so much of these
especially with iMessage and all that stuff. Like, I think they're going to be like, well, we can't really charge for text because nobody's using it.
I think they'll keep on charging, and I think people will kind of move off of them. I think there won't be a complete standardized, you know, Groupon won't have everybody. iMessage won't have everybody. There will always be a need for it, at least in the immediate future. I think you can draw a direct line, though, from, you know, the anticipated, you know, decrease in revenue from those services to the tier data plan. I mean, they need same mentality.
So I do have to say that the – you know, in places where you can't get data, you still can use your text messaging if you get a cell signal. Mm-hmm. And I was at this music festival this weekend, and I had to switch over GroupMe to the SMS mode, enable in order to use it. So there are still places where and times when you do have, you know, if you want to do that, your data sucks, and you want to use text. So I mean, I guess that's always going to be there.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's not surprising. It's one of those things where I'm my outrage is gone because I expect – I'm just like, yeah, of course. Of course. Why don't you guys charge $80 for it? Sure. Of course you're going to do that.
Fantastic. Thank you, Verizon. Thank you, AT&T.
And I think Verizon's is actually like $5 more than AT&T's, I want to say. I think the base AT&T one is 25 bones and it's 30 on Verizon. But
Verizon's all more expensive in general for everything.
Yeah. And I think on the data isn't at the – well, except for – because this isn't talking about 4G either, and that's a whole other, you know, surcharge on top of that, which is going to be even worse. That's another thing. They could go and just roll it into like, you know, 4G charges and like screw people that way. This is somewhat annoying because this is kind of going to affect everybody. But I don't think most people will see it. And I think it's all about getting those you know, those users that can afford to do it. You know, I mean, sure, the way they've structured it is that, you know, they're not going to go and like alienate all their customers. They're going to go and like the people that can afford to do it, that are high bandwidth users, will pay for it because they need to pay for it. And everybody else will probably go and get, you know, under the line.
Do those plans, are they also for people that use like the mobile hotspots and the USB adapters for, you know, business or whatever? Are those the same plans?
You know, I don't know.
I'm curious because those people are going to use a ton of data and legitimately. You know,
let me check here.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I know people that, you know, that live off of that as their full-on internet connection for work. You know, they're definitely doing that. I mean, I guess you could get something like Clearwire or whatever that's, you know, I think unlimited, I think.
I think it does count to those, to all devices.
It's the same thing. It's for everything.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Indeed, sir.
So, yes, the cell phone companies. Thanks, guys. Thanks for existing.
Exactly. We love you so much.
We love you.
You're great. You're great. Wonderful. and also, like, looking forward for this next week, if rumors and whatnot are to be believed, this is finally the week that we're going to go and see that gold master of OS X Lion hitting the download for regular people across the world. It's looking like on Boy Genius Report had an article about Apple Store preparations, and it looks like the 14th might be the day, this Thursday.
Yeah, new Lion and refresh of the MacBook Air.
Yeah, which I got to say, I'm so excited about. Like running Sandy Bridge, and
those things are going to kill it.
Yeah, with Thunderbolt, it's going to be, because Thunderbolt is like designed for this thing. You just need one port, right? In theory, they could just have one port and have an adapter for, you know, breakout for everything else, and you're just good to go.
That's totally true. Like so, that, I didn't think about that. That's a really good point.
I mean, I don't know if those adapters are even ready yet, but
they will eventually.
Yeah, in theory, they could go and have, you know, a MacBook Air that's got a power plug, got a Thunderbolt. I mean, and that's that. I mean, I'm sure they're probably going to have audio. Are there audio ins and outs of the MacBook Airs right now?
Yes, because, well, there's definitely audio out because you can plug headphones in.
Got it. They'll keep those, obviously, but
yeah.
But I'm really excited about the new MacBook Airs. I've always really, really liked them. Not the first gen, but the second gen have been really, really cool.
And once they bump the specs, they got, you know, they got way better.
Yeah, if they the same price points with the Sandy Bridge, I mean, the only mark against them has really been, processor speed. And even that has been, you know, negated to a certain degree because of the
not
SSD
really
drive. Yeah. And that just goes away completely.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
And I definitely think we're going to see – I would not be surprised. I'm not going to say we're definitely going to see. I would not be surprised at all if, you know, this Christmas, you know, Apple is marketing the MacBook Air as the primary laptop. You know, that's their signature laptop at this point. Like, it's not the MacBook Pro. I really think for most people, that's going to be the go-to.
Well, and yes, I agree. I'm with you 100%, and I think they should. I think they should, because now that they can have these machines with these bumped up specs, why not?
Yeah, it's really, really exciting.
So we'll definitely talk about Lion next week, because I'm going to be upgrading and installing and doing whatever for the whole week. So.
I as well. I'm really, really glad this is happening, because I have not had a chance to run it yet. Like, I've not really had a chance to play with it more than just like a passing glance. And so just to really kind of get down into it, I'm really looking forward to the opportunity.
I mean, I really think if it does full on launch, even if it doesn't, I may, when I get back to work, the first thing I may do is just upgrade one of the current machines, because I want to know how the upgrade process works.
Yeah. I'm going to be, you know, putting it on an external machine, because I don't have I'm not going to go and trust it, you know, messing up my older version of Logic and everything. But
there's also, you know, and I'll try and find the link and maybe we can post it. There's a list that came out, one of the other websites put up, of program compatibility.
I've seen
with
that.
Lion.
Yeah. I've seen that. Yeah, yeah.
So we may want to throw that up for people. If you're interested, you can check it out and see, you know, what will work and what will not.
Yeah, because obviously, if anybody out there is thinking about it and isn't like hasn't been through, you know, been to this rodeo before, always best with the new OS, especially like a major revision like this, to kind of, you know, make sure all your stuff works before you go and upgrade. I actually had a couple of people asking this last week.
Very
I should
important.
Upgrade. And yeah, because you know, you never know. Lots of stuff is changing, more so than usual, I think, with Lion than even, you know, Snow Leopard.
Yes,
and you know, you never know what app is going to exhibit what strange behavior after upgrading. So make sure
and
all
sometimes
your stuff
you
is
may want to just. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Brian.
Oh no, go ahead.
I was going to say sometimes, you know, sometimes it's not a bad idea. I mean, I know we all want the new and shiny right away, but you know, to wait a couple weeks.
Absolutely.
You know, and see what gets reported out there of the glitches and the bugs. And a lot of times Apple within 2 weeks has an update already out. So
yeah, because there's always going to be stuff that you can't go and, you know, there's gonna be problems, you know, no company can anticipate until it's out there in the wild.
Exactly.
And so even waiting for like the first point upgrade is not necessarily a bad idea, depending on what you do and what your needs are.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So that's our advice.
Exactly. Now, sir, you have been in Chicago. Have you been eating in Chicago? I know that's a stupid question, but I need to lead in with something.
Have I been eating in Chicago? Have I? Let me just say that's all I've been doing in Chicago. That's all I do when I come here. I eat and I hang out with family at meals. It's like you come, you eat, you wait for the next meal. You figure out where you're going. You're at lunch, you figure out where you're going for dinner. It's the way it is out here. So yes, I have been eating like crazy, and I'm going to talk about a couple of things that I, you know, a couple of my favorite things that I got to have while I was out here. And we're also, I'm going to keep it going into next week. So the first thing, is actually my favorite dish of all time is Chicago style pizza, which we've touched on in the past. I love Chicago style pizza. And for those of you that don't know, if you don't know, Chicago style pizza is a thick pan pizza, that originated in Chicago, and actually originated, there's a restaurant called Uno in Chicago, and it was the first restaurant in 1943. This guy Ike Sewell opened up the restaurant in downtown Chicago and created the deep dish Chicago style pizza. And the cool thing about it is the place became so popular, and they wanted to expand, right? So they didn't have any room on the corner where they were at. So instead of expanding next door, they actually bought a location on the opposite corner and opened up their second place called Due. So there's Uno and Due right across from each other in the city.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And as a local, we do not go to Uno because Uno is a tourist trap. But the locals go to Due's.
Is it the same food, same menu and everything?
Same exact everything. Same exact. Uno is the original, but Due, you know, it's the same thing.
Right.
And that's just – I never go to Uno. I know it's tiny. It's small. There's always a huge line. I mean, both of them get a line, but just like – And great, now I'm like screwing myself because now everybody that hears this is going to go to Due's. But that, you know, the local tip that I'm throwing out there. But,
tell them Scott Gold sent you.
Yes, it is my favorite dish on the planet. I love Uno's sausage. I mean, Due's sausage deep dish pizza, and the deep dish pizza. It's, you know, it's a deep dish crust, and you know, and baked in this deep dish pan, layered with cheese on the bottom, and you know, basically a layer of crust, and then a layer of cheese, and then on the top it's this smashed flat sausage, basically taken out of the casing, smashed flat, and laid across the top. So it covers the entire. It's not like pieces of sausage. It's like a layer of sausage across the whole top, and then chunky tomato sauce on the top, and then sprinkled with some Parmesan cheese, and they bake it. It takes like 30-40 minutes to order one.
No question for you, real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
On the sausage front, when I had Chicago pizza growing up, the first one I had was pepperoni. That's what I always had because I'm a pepperoni freak.
Uh-huh.
And there's a place here in Los Angeles I went to. I won't mention it now because we can maybe do a bit on it later.
Yeah.
But that was – they did that same thing with the you know, that smashed sausage, which at the time it was like really weird. I'd never seen that before. Is that what is considered the classic?
It is. Okay. It is. And are you talking about the place – we won't talk about it, but are you talking about the place in Silver Lake?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So there's another basically, Uno started it, and then a bunch of other places opened up, Gino's and Lou Malnati's and stuff like that. And from what I understand, the second place that teared off this was Lou Malnati's. And from what I understand, the lore, it's cool. There's all this like pizza lore. Lou Malnati worked at Uno's, and he then branched off and created his own place and took the recipe, basically a little spin on it, and created Lou Malnati's. So Lou Malnati's is very close and similar to Uno's, and the guys in LA basically fashioned their recipe off of Lou Malnati's. Gotcha. So it's just, you know, like you're all in the same family in that range, which is pretty awesome. I just, it's cool because not that long ago, a corporation bought out Uno, and they started opening like Uno Chicago Grill around the country. It was never the pizza wasn't exactly the same. It wasn't good. And when they did that, the original Uno pizza and Due's, they changed the tomato sauce. They actually changed the tomato sauce to like more of a paste. And I remember coming back into town and ordering, and I was like, what happened? I can't believe it. You know, it's still good because the crust is amazing. It's this really flaky, delicious crust. And, you know, the cheese and the sausage, you know, they just do it right still. But they had the paste. So this time when I was there, I'm sitting there eating with my brother, and I'm like, oh, they have the original tomato sauce back. And my brother said that he actually asked them about it, because the last time he was there, he noticed the same thing. And they said, yeah, they actually went back to it. Occasionally they'll run out and they'll go back to, they'll do the tomato paste, but all in all, they do the original, you know, traditional chunky tomato. It's like, you know, the pieces of tomato top there. Oh,
now is that the only, so like, do all the chains do the original, or is that just Uno and Due?
I think it's just Uno and Due. I think the chains still do the paste. I think it's easier to do for some. Yeah. And the pizza, it's, I mean, if you go to the chains, they're nice places, but the pizza, it's just different. And I don't know if it's that the recipe is a little different. They've tweaked it for, you know, for whatever, but it's not exactly the same pizza.
And I got to say, like, that, those chunks of tomato, I'm obviously not the expert you have. Like, I learned about Chicago-style pizza in Livermore, California, which is not really the same thing. But the first time I had it, I'm like, what is this huge, you know, pie? I'm literally, as a pie.
Yeah, it's a pie.
You're eating through it, and you kind of – the way it's structured is different than regular pizza, so you don't know what you should be expecting, like, flavor-wise.
You should hold it or you should cut into it.
Yeah, and I'm like, what taste and flavor should I expect from what part? You know what I mean? It's all mixed together. But when you go and bite into that chunk of tomato, when it, like, it explodes, it just, like, the difference in the texture and the temperature, like, is just insane. It's so good.
I mean,
I can't imagine it with paste.
No, it's totally different. And it's, you know, you say it's pizza, but it's its own – dish upon itself.
Yeah.
Like, you can't really compare it to another style of pizza because it's just its own thing.
It's more like a casserole than a pizza.
Yeah, it really is. And like, the way I like to eat it is I'll put it on the plate. I'll start it off with the fork and knife and kind of dig into it, because these things are hard to hold. And then by the time I get kind of closer to the crust, then I'll pick it up and I'll eat the rest, and then I'll down the crust at the end, which is, you know, to me, I'm just like addicted to that crust as I'm eating it towards the end of getting to the end of the pizza. You get this, you know, the crust around the edge, and it's a little, you know, burnt in little teeny parts of it and perfectly crispy. Oh, man.
So you hate it.
Yeah, my mouth is watering right now as I talk about it. So that's my first thing. And I'm going to segue into a little another pizza thing that this is going to be a little lengthy food thing, because I have this and I have one little other thing, and then we're going to expand to next week. So we got food galore here, baby. There's another pizza item that I love in Chicago. I don't know if it's a Chicago originated. I'm not sure, but there is a thing called a pizza puff. Yes, a pizza puff. Now, what is a pizza puff? A pizza puff is it's basically an enclosed pizza. It's like the dough, and inside it's wrapped dough with sausage and cheese, or pepperoni and cheese, folded into like a little puff pastry and then deep fried.
Interesting.
Yes, and so you take it out of the fryer and you bite into it, and everything is melted into each other, and this terrible for you but amazing tasting fried outside. And it's just, you know, you get it at the local hot dog places here all over the place, and I haven't really been able to find it anywhere else. So I think it's a Chicago thing. I'm not sure if people are listening elsewhere. You can let me know if it's available elsewhere, but a pizza puff, it's a staple of my youth. I used to go to the local hot dog place here, and I would get a hot dog. I mean, I ate like a pig when I was younger. I still do, but when I was younger, I was unstoppable.
I can't imagine, quite honestly, because you can like put it away now.
I mean, can you imagine
make more? I don't understand.
Like the metabolism of a 16-year-old, you could not
I'm
stop.
I'm a hummingbird. What are you talking about?
So I would get a hot dog and two pizza puffs and fries and a large Coke.
God bless you, Mr. Gold.
It was something to be seen. Let me tell you, it was something to be seen. So that's my pizza, you know, encapsulation. And the last thing that I'm going to talk about is a breakfast dish. There is a restaurant out here called Walker Brothers Original Pancake House. And there's a chain called the Original Pancake House. Have you heard of that at all?
I have not.
Okay, so they're actually around the country. There's some in California. There's some in Vegas, mostly Midwest area, East Coast also. But in Chicago, the Walker Brothers bought the franchise rights to the Original Pancake House, and they built these amazing restaurants with these huge stained glass windows, and it kind of became their signature. And so you would go to Walker Brothers. It's called Walker Brothers Original Pancake House, but all the ones around here are Walker Brothers. And so you go there for their breakfast, and it's a breakfast place, pancakes and omelets and stuff like that. And actually, this is not what I'm talking about, but their omelet was featured on the Food Network as, you know, like the best thing I ever ate on that, if you've ever watched it on the Food Network. So the one thing that they do have is it's called an apple pancake. Now, it seems simple. You would think just pancake with some apples. But this thing is insanity on a plate. It is a baked, huge baked pancake with cinnamon and sugar and baked apples into. It's almost like a pie. It's almost like a breakfast pie, but there's no pie crust on the top. It's just an open top with dough and cinnamon and sugar and baked apples inside, and it comes out and it's huge. And it is just a specialty. It's something to behold. I mean, you cannot eat this thing. I have a picture of it up on my food spotting. It is, Brian, you actually, you can order these, like frozen. I'm going to order one so we can have one because you have to try this.
It sounds like madness. Definitely.
I mean, it's like, you know me, I like to go to brunch and I get some, I get some eggs and I get something sweet. You know, like this is the something sweet that 10 people at the table can eat.
Yeah. Just so people know, Scott orders breakfast dessert. Basically, we go out to brunch and we'll all have food. We'll have omelets or whatever. You could even go and have pancakes and a side of bacon or something. Then right. Scott will order the cinnamon toast, French toast pancake, pie or whatever there is. The most
for
like
the table,
for yeah,
the
for the table. But the most like the most cheese creamy sweetest, yeah, whatever you need. That will be the thing. And I gotta say, you're never wrong.
You're
never wrong that I've seen.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I just, for some reason, I always, when you're eating, you have the savory breakfast, and then you have your cup of coffee, and you always want that taste of sweet. And I think I totally got that from my family, my grandpa, my dad. Just like my grandpa Abe totally had that, and I know that's where it comes from. So the Original Pancake House, they're all over the place. Apple pancake. Phenomenal. If you want to try it, you'll see a picture. I'll post it up. And just the baked apple and the cinnamon and the sugar. And it's so – I'm actually full just talking about it right now.
Well, I think so. You just had a Chicago pizza and an apple pancake. You must be very sated.
You know, Brian, what we're going to do? You and I are going to have a Chicago food day where I'm going to order some stuff in. I'll have it shipped. And then you can give your impressions of my favorite things.
Oh, I'm all over that. I'm all over that business like you would not believe.
I like it. We'll do an unboxing of Chicago food.
Yes, we shall.
So that is my food from Chicago. I had more. I'm not going to talk about it this week. We're going to talk about it next week because it's a conversation on its own. Yes, I'm going to tease. There is a restaurant called The Girl and the Goat. It is the girl Stephanie, I believe, Izzard. She won Top Chef a few years ago. She opened up this restaurant in Chicago. It's a place that it's like a 3-month reservation wait. And wow. I went there for dinner the other night, and I will talk all about it next week.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it was very cool. And I posted some pictures up already, and people can see. But I'll talk about it next week. So that is my food extravaganza from Chi-Town.
Awesome. Well, I thank you for that. Now I need to go eat something. Awesome. Anyway, everybody, thank you for joining us this week. It was episode 20, which is kind of awesome.
Wow, episode 20. Yeah. Wow.
So anyway, thanks for hanging out. Hope you guys dug the show. As always, if you like us, go to iTunes and give us a review. That helps us, you know, get bumped up in the rankings and helps new people discover the show, or tell your friends. You can always reach us.
Please spread the word.
Yeah, definitely. We're reachable, you know, on Twitter and on, you know, on email and everything else. All that info is on our site at techbacon.net. Anything else? Are we good?
No, I think we're good.
All right, cool. I'm Brian.
I am Scott.
Take care, you guys.
Thanks.